Welcome to the Herbs with Rosalie podcast, a show exploring how herbs heal as medicine, as food, and through nature connection. I'm your host, Rosalie de la Forêt. I'm an herbalist teacher and the best-selling author of the books Alchemy of Herbs and Wild Remedies. I created this podcast to share trusted herbal wisdom so that you can get the best results when relying on herbs for your health. I love offering up practical knowledge to help you dive deeper into the world of medicinal plants and seasonal living. My goal is that you'll walk away from each episode feeling inspired to start working with herbs in your everyday life. Each episode of the podcast is available on my Herbs with Rosalie YouTube channel, as well as your favorite podcast app. Transcripts and recipes for each episode can be found at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com. To get the latest news as well as fun bonuses, be sure to sign up for my weekly herbal newsletter. Okay, grab your cup of tea. Let's dive in. It was so much fun to have Richo on the show. This was my first time meeting Richo, but I've been benefiting from his herbal presence for decades, from his books to his seeds and plant starts. Seriously, I grow so many different herbal plants thanks to his company, Strictly Medicinals. So it was a special delight to finally connect with him in person. In this episode, we talk about the benefits of Andrographis, also known as the King of Bitters, as well as cover some gardening advice and even life philosophies. We also hear why Richo loves chilies so much and what he includes in his herbal medicine kit. For those of you who don't know him already, Richo Check has dedicated his life to finding, growing, and disseminating seeds of medicinal plants, shrubs, vines, trees, and open pollinated vegetables. He has botanized throughout the U.S., Canada, South America, Europe, China, and Africa in search of native plants and has introduced many unique medicinal herb species to the U.S. His work may be enjoyed by reading any of his books and by visiting his website at www.strictlymedicinalseeds.com. Welcome to the podcast, Richo. I'm so excited that you're here.
Thanks, Rosalie.
Yeah, so I've been wanting to have you on for a while because I consider you one of my herbal teachers. I've learned so much from your books, and I've created an entire herbal garden thanks to you, really, and all of the seeds and starts I've gotten over the years. So it's just an honor to have you here. And I love to dive in just hearing about your story and how the plant path has guided you along the way.
Well, you know, the plants will find a way. They don't need me. They don't need you. They will find a perennial and permanent place on earth. And if we can be in their presence, then all the better. Mm-hmm. I started out as an archaeologist, actually. My professional work started in archaeology. That's what I went to college to do. Anthropology. And no matter where I went in the world, started out in Colombia, I went to East Africa, I went to, of course, all around the United States. I was working at the Coster site in Southern Illinois in 1971. And we were digging through all these layers of Paleolithic settlements. And every time you got to one of the strata that was settlement area, the soil became from buff-colored, sterile, to a black, dark, rich, what we called a cultural layer. And it wasn't black not only because there was a lot of charcoal from fires mixed in, but because of broken down organic matter, i.e. compost, albeit compost that went back 20,000 years. So we would dig through these layers and we would take, of course, copious notes and photographs and try to sort of reconstruct the lifestyle of Paleolithic Indians in the past. And as we dug through, we would put everything into a screen, a table screen, which was actually a tool which became very useful later on as I became an herbalist. We put everything through the table screen, and then, of course, the chert chips and the little bits of bone or some fragments of figurines or whatever would be left on the screen. And underneath there would be this rich, dark dirt. Well, maybe it was a portent of my later leanings that I was always really fascinated by the dirt. And so I would take a wheelbarrow of the dirt and move it up to the outside area, outside the excavation, and dump it. And then after some time, I thought, well, you know, if it was rich earth then, how about now? And so I put some watermelon seeds in there. And the watermelons sprouted and grew, and they continued to move towards the excavation, cascaded over the side of the excavation, down through the late woodland period to the early woodland period to the late Paleolithic, down to the roots of humanity in North America. And there they created beautiful melons dangling and hanging. And I thought, well, you know, after all this time, this dirt still hasn't lost its magic.
Yeah, we could call it well-aged compost, huh?
Definitely.
That was just brought up a lot of fun memories for me, Richo, because my mom was an archaeologist and an ethnobotanist, and I hadn't thought about this in years, but I remember being a young kid running around the site and the table screens and everything. So, yeah.
Somebody was just asking me how to clean comfrey, and I said, well, get yourself a table screen and put the roots up there and spray them off with the garden hose. And she's like, well, it's 20 degrees below zero in Ohio. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do that right now.
So the early days were archaeology into soil enthusiast. And then I know you've traveled across the world and botanized. How did that come about?
Well, when I was 16 in 1971, I went to Colombia to do a surface survey among the Tairona people, the historical Tairona people. And this was in the Sierra Nevada del Santa Marta near Santa Maria on the Caribbean coast. I experienced my first poultice at that time when my crew leader, Jack Wynn, cut his foot and got an infection and then was moaning in a hammock up in the foothills in a little grass hut, which later burned down, actually. And it wasn't my fault. But anyway, Jack was lying back in his hammock, and Don Luis Abelardo, who was the one-armed man who was the guide for the expedition, went out into the jungle and he got himself a leaf and put some fat on it. And then he took it and I can still see him rubbing it back and forth on the chimney of a lantern where there's like the single flame in there, you know, warming it up. And then he plastered that to Jack's foot and then put on a sock. And then everybody went to bed. And in the morning, I took the sock off of Jack's foot and peeled off the poultice. And on the outside of the poultice, having been sucked through the leaf, was all this purulent matter from his infection. So it had actually gone through the leaf and ended up on the outside of the leaf. And when I peeled it away, there was a little tiny seashell right in the slit of the cut. And I thought, well, maybe that was the reason that it infected so much, was because there was foreign matter in there. So I got out my Swiss Army knife and I plucked that seashell out of there. And Jack was fine after that. Wow. So I saw the power of healing and the power of using plants right out of the environment. And of course, being a doctor's kid, you know, I would have gone for the betadine solution, but I had none. Mm-hmm. And so I was given a very graphic demonstration of the value of the herbal poultice in a wild setting there in the early days. And I just, things like that kept happening to me until finally, I got tired of looking at old bones and potsherds and ended up concentrating on green growing things instead. And also, you know, analyzing secondary constituents and raising up a family.
Well, you strike me as a very adventurous person, Richo, because very young age, you're, you know, off in other countries and you continue to travel, I know, to Africa, to China. And I'd love to hear about the beginnings of Strictly Medicinal Seeds.
Well, you know, I was the production manager at Herb Pharm, PHARM. They're manufacturers of liquid extracts here in Southern Oregon. I was the production manager and quotes unquote herbalist for 11 years with them. And so I learned a great deal through multiple batching, creating my own experiments around extraction so that actually, you know, we would extract with 25% alcohol, 50% alcohol, 75% alcohol, and 100% alcohol, which is only 95% pure, actually. And then we would be able to taste test the results. I had little tincture presses that we would use for this, that could press out small amounts of material so we didn't have too much wastage. And then we could run those through for HPTLC analysis and look at the profile of active constituents and make some decisions about what the best extraction technique really was. So I was involved in all of that, basically product development for about 300 different botanicals. That really helped me understand extraction of herbs, whether it's better to use herbs in the fresh state or the dried state, all the little differences between, for instance, plant part or the season of harvest, you know, all those minutiae really could be kind of pinned down. That's where I started to call myself an herbalist, or other people started to call me an herbalist at that point. And, you know, none of this is really much good unless you use it in your own life. And so as a grandpa, I still have instances where, for instance, my grandkids will present with a cough that, you know, the little ones, when they get an infection, it's so quick to come on and it can be so debilitating and it can even be life-threatening. You know, it's good to know that you can take some elecampane tincture and mix it with a little licorice, you know, as a antitussive, and you give that to the little ones and watch the cough diminish, you know, and bring the fever down, have some means to, you know, create wellness and rest among those that you're closely associated with. These kinds of things are part of our natural birthright as human beings. We've lived among the plants since the olden times, and the plants are there for us as long as we understand the value of that relationship. Free of charge. No plastic involved. Can go right out to the garden and dig an onion and make an onion poultice and open up somebody's breathing with that. So many options there for us. So much empowerment, so much freedom. So inexpensive. Mm-hmm. And so effective. So that's really the path that I like to help guide people on, is to know more about the plants and have the plants teach them through their service to the plants to live a more healthy lifestyle.
That reminds me of a quote from you that I really like, and I can only paraphrase it, but it's something like, you know, there's what the plants can do, but what they've really done is teach me why I'm useful or how I can be useful. And I just love that, like, you are speaking to this relationship that happens. It's not just like, how can I use this plant, but what teachings does the plant have for me in guiding my own life, is what I took away from the quote.
Respect. You know, this morning I was walking into the greenhouse, and there was a plant on the ground. It was a weed that I'd taken out of a pot the day before when I was repotting some succulents, and I just dumped it and forgotten about it. And I picked it up and it was still alive, you know, and I went, well, what can I do for this little yellow dock plant? It really doesn't deserve to be thrown down on the ground. You know, that's not the message I want to give the plants. So I found a dead pot and removed the mold from the surface of it and put in some new fresh dirt and dug in a little hole, you know, and replanted my yellow dock in there. and firmed it all around and gave it a little water and then forgot about it. And man, I came back a couple hours later and it was just so happy, so vibrant, you know. And really, when it comes down to it, yellow dock is kind of like, it's a weed that a lot of people throw away and a lot of people will till under, and yet it has a lot of value. There's, you know, it has a gentle laxative influence and yet it contains a lot of iron. And so it's really good for women to take during their menses, and other iron supplements tend to be constipating, but yellow dock isn't. And so it's really two good medicines in one plant. And it doesn't deserve to be thrown down on the floor and forgotten about.
Yeah. Thanks for that lesson. Well, I'm excited to hear about, well, actually I want to go back just, so you were archaeologist, ethnobotanist, you started gathering seeds. I didn't know that you were part of all of the herb farm experiments with all the medicine making. When people ask me, you know, like, how should I make a tincture of this plant? I always say, well, how I start is I go and look at the label at Herb Farm and see what they did and, you know, go from there, because I know those are, you know, in terms of reinventing the wheel, might as well start there. So that's cool to know you're a part of that. And then, I mean, now you have this amazing company that supplies seeds and herbs to people all over. Again, my garden is filled. And I love that you said that, you know, your mission is to help people connect to the plants. And you've definitely done that for me, because I've connected with so many plants. I grow a lot of like oddball things because I can get them from you. And then I get to connect with those plants, you know, which I've learned so much from my astragalus, from my tulsis, all the different, last year I grew all the different kinds as one of your kits. And I've also grown Andrographis, which is a plant that you're going to talk about today, which I'm super excited for, because I feel like the people who know Andrographis love Andrographis. And then there are people who just don't know Andrographis. So I hope we can change that today.
We had COVID for Christmas, and Andrographis and elecampane were my daily take. And it took 4 days to get over the infection. Luckily, we had enough groceries in the house and we could go out and get chickweed out of the field. We made the Andrographis and elecampane on a dosage of about five times a day. And I never did get a cough, but I coughed up a lot of stuff. Or didn't really cough it up, but it came up, as it were. And I kind of made me feel like, you know, I was almost like nipping it in the bud, like, I should have had a cough, but I didn't ever get one because I had the right herbs with me. And then there are these unpleasant gastric effects that go along with pandemic. And Andrographis, as you know, is extremely bitter. And so it really astringes all those tissues. It prevents the uncomfortable gastric effects of the sickness. So one of the things about an herb that's so powerful like that, and you're mentioning, you know, your ability to like bring in some unusual herbs into the garden. And I feel like on one hand, we mustn't forget the comfreys and the calendulas and the arnicas, you know, because they're at the very core of our experience of European or Western herbalism. But at the other, on the other side, knowing something like Andrographis is extremely important. And this is basically a tropical weed, more or less a tropical annual. Although when you get into the tropics and you call something an annual, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, because they don't have the same kind of cold dormancy that we have here. And so a lot of times annual tropicals don't really even get killed off, and so they can live for several years. But the reason I chose that as a recipe was because with an herb like that, very useful to make a tincture. Because if you make a tincture, then you can very carefully dose it. Like, some people are allergic to Andrographis. A lot of times, if you take too much, it's unnecessary to take so much. So you work with low doses, one drop to five drops, sort of like in that region. And if you try to make tea, and create that kind of dosage. It's much more difficult. A teaspoon of herb in a cup of hot water. How did it extract? Andrographolide isn't really water soluble anyway, so it's better to use some alcohol in the mix to get that particular diterpenoic compound solubilized. The tincture becomes very, very useful in that way. Plus, also, you're sick. You don't want to like be dinking around with a bunch of strainers and teacups and this and that. You've got just barely enough energy to drop a few drops out of a dropper into a glass of orange juice and quaff it down and then go and lie down again.
Mm-hmm. I really get the sense you're speaking from some near experience.
Yeah. I mean, tea is fine. And tea is very good. It's very healthy. And it's a good, healthy drink. And you could certainly make some andrographis tea and sip it throughout the day. I'm not saying that's wrong. It would work pretty well. There are some flavonoids in there that are very water soluble that are quite useful. Anti-inflammatories also. Any herb you look at is going to be a complex mix of elements that are soluble in different kinds of solvents and which may or may not lend themselves to different, you know, techniques, hot, cold, dried, fresh, succus, tincture, salve, ointment, what have you. That's why I wrote the book Making Plant Medicine, so that people could look at the herbs and see what are the most like level-headed ways to prepare and when to harvest and things of this nature, beginning at the beginning and ending somewhere around the middle and elevated only by one's own relationship with the plant that goes beyond anything that can be read or said. Mm. Yeah, the andrographis tincture is a one to two. On the fresh herb side of things, it's 1 to 2, which means 1 gram of the herb or one part of the herb gets mixed with 2 parts or 2 mL of the solvent, the menstruum. 75% alcohol and 25% water will extract out the goodness. And so if you had 100 grams, which is about 1/4 pound of fresh andrographis, then you would mix that with 200 ml of liquid and blend it up in a blender. And that 200 ml of liquid would consist of 75% alcohol and 25% water mixed together. Then a lot of times, actually, you do get better extraction with the dried herb. So the dried herb formula is 1 to 5. That's 1 part of the herb to 5 parts of the liquid, 50% alcohol and 50% water. What that does is it, when you dry down the herb, then the cell structure becomes very brittle. And it can be broken apart through grinding. Mm-hmm. Versus if it's fresh and you put it in a blender, well, it looks like it's a slurry, but really if you looked at it under the microscope, you would see that a lot of that cell structure is still intact. So it hasn't like released its goodness. So if you dry it and you grind it, and you don't even have to have a coffee grinder to grind it. You can just grind it through a fine screen onto a clean tabletop. Then you mix that with the 5 parts of the menstruum, and the water part of it dissolves out the water soluble constituents in the herb. The alcohol part of it dissolves out the alcohol soluble constituents. And then you macerate it for a couple of weeks and you shake it and put your good thoughts into it and think about how it's going to heal people. And you keep an eye out on it to make sure that everything looks good. It's not turning some weird color. First of all, it extracts out the chlorophyll, doesn't it? And it's nice and green. And then after some time, that begins to oxidize and it turns brown. No reason to worry. That's natural. It's going to happen. Then you put it in a tincture press and you press it out. You allow it to settle overnight. And then you pour it off through a coffee filter. And it becomes very pure that way. And you have your andrographis tincture and you can put it in your little dropper bottle. Label it properly with the year. It's going to last forever anyway. It's so bitter. It never really changes. And you keep that in your cupboard for when it's really needed. Mm-hmm. Now you can create your own little herbal apothecary that way, you know, different kinds of extracts. The alcoholic extracts made from dry herbs are going to last longest. Mm-hmm. and the ones made from fresh herbs last less long. And the oils are only good for about 6 months before they start to smell rancid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there are some various tricks around that to try to get them to last a bit longer, put some vitamin E oil in there or whatever. Again, empowering. You have what's needed. When somebody comes by, oh, we had an employee that was missing some days of work and she had such a terrible toothache and swollen gums and whatnot. She, you know, bless her heart, she's working for me. She's packaging seeds and shipping out seeds like there's no tomorrow. Sometimes as many as 300 orders a day.
Wow.
And all these little green bombs going off in different parts of the world, you know, boom, 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 just the kind of peace bomb that you need.
Hmm.
And yet she's suffering. And so I gave her some Spilanthes and Self-Heal, you know, and had her swish with that. Next day she came back and she was like, wow, I was really amazed. You know, the pain went away and the swelling is really down. I'm like, yeah, herbs work. You know, now you can send out your packages with a little more faith.
Hmm. Oh, I always love hearing the success stories, Richo. And thanks for walking us through the Andrographis tincture, both fresh and dried. And for everyone listening, you can download your free handout for that at the show notes or at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com.
Fair enough.
So with the Andrographis tincture, do you tend to use it primarily for viral type infections? Do you use it also as a digestive aid?
You know, I think it's true that we don't have enough bitters in our diet. And so on that level, it doesn't probably make a lot of difference whether you're taking Artemisia absinthium, the wormwood, or if you're taking a small amount of Andrographis. I tend to like bitter greens in my diet, you know, when I'm well. Give me some chicory, a salad made with chicory, and I feel great afterwards. But if I'm really sick, then I'm not going to be chewing on some freaking chicory, you know. I'm getting down to Andrographis and taking half a shot of Andrographis.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a question of dosage and a question of, you know, foods versus medicine versus, you know, medicinal foods. How does one really work with all that? But we don't have enough bitters in our diet. So I encourage everybody to put more bitter, appreciate all the tastes. You know, that's a way into herbalism is to appreciate all those tastes.
Mm-hmm.
I was on Facebook and, you know, I'm sorry, on Facebook, you have to be so nice because you obviously don't want to get any feedback about not having been nice, but you get the most stupid things people say. And it's so hard not to be nice, but you do it anyway, just because you know that you don't want the pain.
Yeah. Great life tips from Richo.
Yeah. But anyway, somebody was like, I was encouraging ingestion of a small amount of Andrographis just to gain a feel for it. And she said, yuck, that was so bitter. I had to spit it out. And I'm like, okay, you know, learn to appreciate the different tastes. It's going to be really good for you. Or this one, the peppers, you know, honestly, for wellness, there's really nothing much better you can do for yourself than to take some capsicum every day.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people will say, oh, you know, I don't like any hot stuff, this and that. Well, take a little and kind of get used to it and put it into your diet because it's really, really good for your heart and for your vascular system and for your brain. And it's going to make you live, car accidents aside, or you know, like falling off a cliff or whatever kind of things might happen, you know, if a stray bullet in Mexico or whatever, you know, by golly, you're going to live 10% longer. Put some capsicum in your diet. And we grow these in the greenhouse. This is a aji amarillo. This is the pepper of Peru because it's in Peruvian cuisine. I eat peppers every day. I feel great. I have some fat in my diet, you know, but it opens up my vascular system so that that fat doesn't really do me the harm that it would do otherwise. There was a great statistical analysis done, and it was a big surprise to everybody when they found out that people who eat peppers live 20% longer than people who don't eat peppers.
Wow.
Basic. Or your standard carminative herbs. You know, if you come to my kitchen and you eat my cooking, you're going to taste summer savory in almost everything.
Interesting.
And so I, the basic Mediterranean herbs, summer savory, rosemary, sage, thyme, all those things, you know, that's not just for the taste. Mm-hmm. It keeps your food from separating while it's being digested. Mm-hmm. And it means that you're going to have more efficient digestion. And a lot of the toxins that are in food are going to be neutralized by the spices that you eat. Like you were talking about the plan, you know, for the garden plan. And I have a garden plan for next year. And what I like to do is try to grow a lot of the stuff that's either extremely helpful for people and put it in little bags and send it out to people who might not have grown it yet, or stuff that nobody else can seem to properly grow. And so I'm just trying to prove that it can be done. And it's something that's needed, like the andrographis or gotocola or lobelia or sculpcap or any pulsatilla, stuff like that. But I'm growing summer savory and orange thyme in a big scale next year to be able to send out to people and encourage them to use those things in their food on a daily basis, because I love people and I want them to live longer. I mean, I love herbs more, but I do love people. And so, you know, you get the two together and it's just like love on love.
Hmm.
Yeah. So those basic carminative herbs are so important to us. And, you know, you don't have to grow something really unusual from a land far away. You can grow rosemary bush right in your front yard, take a nip of that every day and remember to be healthy.
Hmm. Well, one of my favorite things to do is get your seed catalog each year, and the descriptions you have for the plants are so much fun. And sometimes it makes it hard to choose. Like I think last year I ordered like 8 different mints because I just couldn't, they are all so fun. So I just had to try them all. I do grow summer savory, which I got from you, and I just haven't used it that much. So I am now inspired to work with it more.
Well, yeah, you could use thyme instead. It doesn't really matter. Okay. Or winter savory.
Thyme is kind of my plant. I use a lot of thyme.
Yeah. Thyme makes a great tea, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does. And for me, most of my soups, I can't imagine a soup without chilies and without garlic and without thyme. I just don't know if I could call it a soup. So.
Right. So you use the chilies too?
Yeah, I don't think as much as you do, but what I love is fermented chili sauce. That's something that we use all the time. So it's kind of, you know, straight out of the garden fermented.
Irreplaceable.
And, yeah, it's so yummy.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, Richo, I'm really excited to talk about your latest book, Growing Plant Medicine, Volume 1 with Volume 2 along the way. I've learned so much from your books along the years, and I'd had your previous plant growing book. And so when this one came out, it was an easy yes to say that I definitely need that in my life. And I have to say this book really surprised me. I don't think it should have, like having known your other books, but you know, growing plants, it could be kind of a dry topic and it can kind of be like a explanatory, like do this, do that, do this. And that is not your book. Your book is filled with lyricism and stories and poetry and incredible knowledge. I mean, every plant entry, the amount of knowledge that's in there about propagating the plant, getting to know the plant, all from that relationship perspective. It just feels like even if somebody wasn't into gardening, they would want to read this book because of all of these tidbits of knowledge that are just interspersed throughout it all. So I'm very excited.
Thanks, Rosalie.
Yeah, I couldn't love it more. Yeah. I read it, you know, I just got it. And then in preparation for this, I read a lot of it again. And it just...
Oh, sweet.
The stories are real. I mean, that's how we love to learn. And you have a way of telling stories and a way of really interspersing a lot of knowledge through story.
Well, let me speak to that for just a second. A couple things.
Yeah.
One is the new catalog is just now going out. It's at the printers.
Oh, good.
So that's always a lot of fun. And here's, can you see that?
Yeah.
That's one of the illustrations for the ongoing story that's, I got a whole Earth catalog back in the days in the 60s. And they had this little story on the bottom of the pages. And you had to flip the page, you know, to view more things that you could buy, obviously, but in order to read the story. And it's a story about hippies in a bus and so forth and so on. And I was always impressed by that. I was like, oh, that's some good marketing. And so we'd have a story, Maudie and the Coconuts, in the new Strictly Medicinal seed catalog that's going out to people. And you can go to our website at www.strictlymedicinalseeds.com to order a catalog if you don't have one. If you've ordered from us in the past, you'll be getting one at your door by the 15th of this month. But in any case, so it's one of those ongoing stories that's kind of like has a lot of suspense. And it was like in the movies when they used to have like the hero would be right at the edge of the cliff, you know, and just about ready to fall off. And then they'd be like, oh, we buy some popcorn and, you know, you can see the second part of the series, you know, it's going to cost you a quarter. It'll be out, you know, in a month or whatever. And everybody would come back to find out what happened. So that's going on with the new catalog. We're having a lot of fun with it. Of course, the illustrations are done by my daughter, Senna, who's a very accomplished botanical illustrator and also a good cartoonist. And to her credit, she must have the plant in front of her to speak to the plant when she's making a drawing of it. Volume 2 of Growing Plant Medicine, quite frankly, it's everything I know. I'm not going to produce any more books. That's enough. It has 2,500 names in the index. My wife and I have been moving through the index very slowly. We have another 8 hours left of fine-tuning to finish the index. And that I felt really like super motivated to come out with volume 2 because I finished volume 1 and then everybody's like, when is volume 2 coming out? And I'm like, oh, well, it'll be out pretty soon, you know? And then I'm like, God, I better friggin' get on with writing it because so far nothing has happened. There is no volume 2, you know, but this was a secret. So I spent 190 days straight producing a monograph every day.
Wow.
Without fail. And volume 2 was then written, but the rest of it, like organizing all the plant names and creating the indexes, there's 500 herb index on seeds per gram. There's a 250 herb index on dry down, which is just it's all these, speaking of dry information, that's like how many pounds of angelica root do you have to harvest fresh in order to produce 1 pound of angelica root dry? You know, I mean,
wow,
it's just like there's a lot of info in there like that. The volume 2 is actually available for pre-order right now, and you get $5 off, and we send it to you in the spring when it's ready. So then you can have volume 1 and volume 2, and that's everything I know. I don't have to do anything else. I'm an old man. What do you expect? I'm going to write some fiction.
Oh, I'd love that.
It's only going to be about fun from here on out. Come on. Every day is, you know, I hope I don't forget to eat my peppers. That's all I'm telling you.
Well, Richo, what I loved about the book too is like when you say it's everything you know, I feel like there's a lot of Richo philosophy in the book. And for example, I love how you began. First, it begins with a story about your kids. So it's this very opening thing. And then you formally begin chapter 1 with your recommendation to walk and observe nature as a first step to gardening. And I'd wonder if you would talk about that a little bit, because I think a lot of people think, I want to start a garden. What plant should I plant? That's kind of the one-two punch there. But you say, oh, let's walk and observe nature first.
Well, in a way, you know, like everything, it starts with my archaeological education. And Adrian Anderson, who was the state archaeologist of Iowa, was one of my first teachers. And he used to go and camp on the site for a night or 2 nights before ever, you know, he dug up the plow sole and then got down to the occupation levels. This helped him like connect, like, what's it really for? What's it really about? What is this place like now? And is there any way that I could be open to a message from the past? So, yeah, I mean, it's midwinter now in Southern Oregon, and we cheat it a little bit. I mean, it hardly ever freezes here, and we have a Mediterranean climate, cold and wet in the winter, hot and dry in the summer, perfect for a seed company. I go out and I walk and I observe and I see like, oh, the chickweed is starting to come on, you know? Like a month ago, there was no chickweed visible. Now there's quite a bit of nice patches of chickweed coming on. And those, you know, of course, this good medicine right there. Those are saponins in chickweed. And you eat that and it's like soap. It cleans you out. And this lady's like, oh my God, I had to talk to you. I've been looking at these herbs for all these years and I finally decided to take some and I had some chickweed in my salad and I'm pooping. And I'm like, that's what it's supposed to do for you. It's cleansing. What do you think a spring cleanse is? Comes out your ears? You know, I mean, come on. So anyway, or like the calendula plant, the calends, you know, calends is named after the fact that the flower occurs at every month of the calendar. Calends, calendula. So there's a calendula plant right out in front of the seed house where the, you know, it's on the south face and it's next to the sidewalk where it's warmed. And it was just a seed that we swept off to the side, you know, and it bloomed vigorously on January 1st.
Oh, wow.
Nice big fat yellow flower. And then the next day, part of it was gone. It was like, oh, you know, there was some creature that really needed that. So, you know, you're observing in nature, you're seeing, you know, you're watching the flower bloom. You're seeing that something is eating the flower. Take a tip from nature. You know, maybe it's time for you to have some before it's all gone. When do the seeds germinate? What type of seeds are germinating when? Last year, you know, there's so many things you can learn. Like we grew a whole row of tobacco. And then we went in and we collected the tobacco seed. I mean, we don't smoke tobacco, but like a lot of people like to grow it and stuff. And we have to make a living. So anyways, we're selling some tobacco seeds. So I'm shaking the tobacco seed in a bucket. And then I'm tossing the capitula, the seed capsule off to the side, you know. And then about a month later, I'm noticing all this reprod underneath the tobacco. And it's the tobacco seed is coming up. So what do I know? I know it's a warm soil germinator. I know that there's no like need for cold stratification on that seed. It'll just come up readily right away. It's also really interesting. This is Nicotiana, right? It's one of the few seeds that gains germination percentage as you test it over the years. It just gets better and better and better. It's like aged tobacco. But anyway, that's just an example of observing in nature and finding out something about a seed that you might not have known before by watching when it germinates and what kinds of environments it does well in. Or like the moonwort right outside the window here. I mean, it just seemed like only yesterday I was picking those sort of luminescent pods, you know, and pulling them apart. Mm-hmm. And this is a good herb for this year because we're in 24. So you add the 4 to 2 and you get 6, and there's 6 stamina in the cruciferae. So yeah, it's a bright and sunny golden year for us ahead. Last year was pentamerous. It was a fiver. 23, 2 plus 3 is 5. And that gave us things like, you know, mandrake and belladonna and all those dark and mysterious herbs. But this year it's bright and joyful. So that's what I'm giving you is the sixes. This year, it's the sixes. Be happy, Be joyful, serve the plants, and the plants will serve you.
I'll sign up for that, Rachel. You know, hearing you talk about the seeds and observing them in nature, I grew up with a family that gardened. But by the time my dad was really like, quote, teaching me to garden, his gardening was kind of like going to Home Depot and buying sprouts and coming home and putting Miracle-Gro on them, et cetera. So, you know, when I got my garden, I wanted to do things differently, but I hadn't been taught, you know, how to start herbs or how to start any plant from seed. And it seemed like this overwhelming big hurdle. And the information that you have on your site, your catalog, in your books, they basically taught me to be a gardener. Oh, it's true. And
we try
like, teaching me how to like do things that sounded strange and I didn't understand, like how to scarify a seed, you know, how to grow, you know, start them, put them in the freezer or the refrigerator, get them to germinate, like all these things I would never have known. I could have probably, you know, tried to grow some of those plants and failed because I didn't know the tips, but that's something I just deeply appreciate you. It's not just about set, you know, you're really dedicated to seeing the success of people grow these plants as well.
Yeah. And sometimes I'm surprised myself at how well some of that stuff works. Like marrow root, Luasia cartamoides, it's just a thistle, but it has some adaptogenic properties. Anyway, for years we grew that, and then it got so hot down here, and it's a kind of a Siberian plant, and so it was burning out. We let it go, and then there was still ongoing demand for it, so we got some seeds, and it just made sense. You know, I planted it and left it outside in the cold rain and the snow for a few days, and then I was like playing around with the seeds, and I could see how they'd softened up. It's not just like X number of days in cold conditions. You know, it's not like that. It's not like rote information. This is nature. You have like oscillations of temperature, and you have leaching rain that leaches out germination inhibiting compounds from these plants, seeds, and so forth. As it's not like you go on the internet and I have to laugh at some of the like specific information that's put out there. Could give only 1/2 cup of water every day to your African violet. What a bunch of bullshit. You know, talk to your African violet. Look at how moist it is underneath. See if there's water coming out from underneath when you water it. Forget it for a while and pluck off the dead heads, and suddenly it looks a lot better and you never even touched it for 2 weeks. You know, it's just a bunch of bullshit. Just go out there and look at the plants and examine that seed and see how, you know, it's softened up. Okay. Now it's time to bring the flat in the greenhouse. Put the flat in the greenhouse. The seeds are germinating in 3 days. So you see that's completely different from if you had like planted them and put them right in the greenhouse under the lights. You know, you could wait there for weeks and most of them would just rot away. You need these natural treatments. And so, yeah, I mean, putting them in the refrigerator in moist medium it's a good hit. A lot of times that is very useful, but it's second best to natural techniques.
Thanks for that tip.
Sure.
Well, Richo, before I ask you the final question, I have one more question from your book. In chapter 5, which is the chapter on rules of the green thumb, one of the rules that you write about is that you say a few well-grown plants produce more than many poorly grown plants, which when I read that, it resonated with me. I grow over 100 plants, different medicinal plants now, which is probably too many for me, but I definitely have been at a time growing more. And I had that experience, you know, just in my own like herbal enthusiasm, I wanted to grow all the plants ever. And as I've had more years as a gardener, I've definitely come to step back and like really focus on the ones that I want to see thrive. So I really love that. I mean, it was just such practical advice for folks when they're first starting out, start small. I wonder if you have any other like a tip that pops into your mind about like somebody who's thinking, I want to start an herbal garden. Is there any other like piece of advice you'd hand them? My advice would be to get your book.
Well, you know, I think it does make sense to try to grow everything. And then as soon as you plant everything, then immediately you're going to lose 50% of it because it didn't even come up or you couldn't give it enough attention to bring it on to the next phase or whatever. So that now 50% is gone. Then beyond that, you know, certain things are going to do well for you and be something that you use and that you enjoy. And then other things, you know, they may grow well, but you may not have any use for it or have any connection to it. So that gets sloughed off. Mm-hmm. So eventually, you know, you come up with this like 2% of the totality that does well in your area, that's useful to you in your life, that you have some kind of karmic connection with. And then it's true what you were saying about just growing a few versus a lot. It's not so much, I wasn't talking so much about diversity of species when I was talking about that. I was talking about like grow 6 really good summer savory plants and compost them properly and keep them weeded and water when necessary and harvest, you know, on an ongoing basis. Like you can harvest a plant like that maybe 3 times during the summertime and dry it and rub it out and make it ready versus growing 60 of them and letting them, you know, languish because you don't have enough time to take care of 60 summer savory plants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe miss the opportunity to like weed them. Maybe it's too much trouble to water them. You don't have enough compost to compost them all. You know what I'm saying? It's like, then you end up with nothing. You went after 60 and you got nothing, but mm-hmm. you did 6 and you really stayed on top of your game and you had plenty. That's what that quote okay. means. Hmm.
I love that because that's inspiring for those gardeners who think like, oh, I don't have a huge amount of space. You know, you don't need a huge amount of space. You just need the care and attention and choosing the plants.
Yeah, somebody was talking just the other day, like, well, what do you do? Like, what are your recommendations for people with not very much space? You know, well, first of all, you just grow one thing properly and bring it to fruition and collect the seeds and collect the herb and make the medicine. It's a great start. Just one thing, mm-hmm. you know, just calendula, you know, and you made a calendula tincture so that you could put it on your owie when you had a roller skating accident, and you made your calendula salve so you could put it on your broken thumb when it dried out because you were reading Harry Potter into the middle of the night. You know, and then you had the joy of watching the calendula flower. So I said, well, you know, that's kismet, because I was just out there, and this happens all the time with questions. It's like, I was just thinking about this. I was out on the side of the house over here where there was one of these tortugas. We build these circles of stones and then we fill them with compost and then we plant our plants in there. And I was just vibing on, wow, like it's about 6 feet long. It's about 4 feet wide. And we did mint tea out of that. We did elecampane tincture out of that. We did, there was catnip for the cats. There was Egyptian onions for a stir fry in the morning with eggs and cheese there and garlic. And I started thinking about all the different things that came out of that one little rich bed that was circled by stones so that it would bring in the solar energy, you know, and that it was easy to take care of and so forth and so on. And I thought, well, that's the answer right there. It's just like build a tortuga and you can have all kinds of things going on just with this small amount of space if you keep on top of your game, you know. Let it go to shit and it's shit, but stay on top of it, you know, and compost your shit before you put it down there and you're all good. So yeah, it's amazing how, you know, why tune into your anxiety? It's a negative emotion. Just take a deep breath and plant a seed and move on from there.
I love that, Richo, on so many levels. You mentioned calendula, so I want to give a big shout out to your calendula. I have in the past bought your super orange blossom calendula. It's amazing. And I am honored to be a part of a community garden. And for 2 years now, we planted an entire row of calendula. There's hundreds of plants there. And I tend to that patch all, you know, all the, through the growing season, harvesting the blooms, deadheading, et cetera. And so, and then I have a whole special dryer system because it's a lot of calendula. So I'm drying it all. And then we gather all of us involved in the community garden and we make calendula oil so that we can make face cream and salve and lip balm, which then becomes our gifts for the holidays and everything. So it's a quite a community endeavor. Shout out to Julie. I know she listens to the podcast. She does a lot to get it going too. Anyway, it's just such a special gift, the calendula. And I love those incredible orange blooms that you've selected for us. They're just so resinous and so big and so beautiful. And I just, they turn the oil such an incredibly luscious orange color, which then makes it fun to make all sorts of gifts with. So anyway, your plants have just been such a blessing in my life in so many ways. So thank you so much.
Well, it's good that you're growing a lot of it if you're saving seed, because it's an Asteraceae. Yeah. And so they're an outcrosser. And so in order to, you know, preserve genetic diversity, you need to grow a lot of them and have them share their pollen. And so that's good. You're going in the right direction to grow a couple of rows of it. That's good. A couple thousand plants is really kind of a minimum for us in terms of a calendula grow out so that we avoid inbreeding depression. Who needs inbreeding depression?
No, yeah.
So yeah, that puts us right with the herbal antiseptic, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So many gifts.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah, let's do that now. So my last question for you, Richo, is what would you include in your herbal first aid kit?
Well, so around about midsummer, and again, this is like, you know, the plants talk to you. Instead of you talking to the plants and telling them what to do, they talk to you. And as there's the St. John's wort is flowering, the calendula is flowering, and the yarrow is flowering all at the same time. So, you know, I used to like really, you know, pick everything in season and dry it and set it aside and this and that and use just the right menstruum and so forth and so on. But after a while, you know, I don't really have time for that. So I just go out at the peak of flowering and I pick all these flowers fresh. St. John's wort is, you know, it's this tonic nervine. And so it drives the ingredients deeper into the body when you use it externally. It drives the ingredients deeper and it nourishes the nerves. This is one of the old herbalists called it arnica for the nerves. And so then the calendula, you know, calendula is, it has those resins that are antiseptic. Antiseptic resins. When you pick calendula flowers, you get that. Well, don't, you know, don't wash your hands. Wash your hands in alcohol and use that, because that's the antiseptic aspect of the plant. And then it also has the orange color that you mentioned, that those are the flavonoids. Those are anti-inflammatory. So you get those two different aspects of healing in one plant. And then the yarrow, you know, I've seen miracles with yarrow. It's styptic, you know, it stops the release of blood. So that's very good to have in a antiseptic tincture. So I take all three of those and I just gather as many of them as I can. And I put them in my giant blender. And then I add enough pure alcohol so that it'll blend, which is about a 1 to 2. Mm-hmm. And I blend it all up. And then I macerate that for a couple of weeks and press it out in my strictly medicinal tincture press, which gives me so much more yield and presses out all of the active constituents all the way down to a little tiny flat bit of mark. And then I bottle that up and I put it in the medicine cabinet there. And if anybody presents with an issue, you know, they can just use it freely. Like I was saying, you know, fall down on the cement from your roller skates and skin your knees mommy, 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 what do I do? Well, put this really stingy stuff on there. It's going to make it worse for a minute, and then it's going to feel a lot better. Hmm. So there's that. And there's also somebody came from LA, and unbeknownst to me, they had a lot of internal issues from having lived on the street in LA, including some sexually transmitted diseases and this sort of thing. They came up to me after a few days and they were like, man, this stuff is really good. And I'm like, well, you're not taking it internally, are you? And they're like, you bet I am.
Wow.
So I guess the herbs find their use wherever they're most needed. And sometimes, you know, it's beyond what you were thinking.
Mm-hmm. I love the all-purpose blends because there's something to be said for just having that blend that's just magic for so many different things. So that's a good one. Yarrow, St. John's wort, calendula.
And also just spontaneously, like, I mean, I was weeding the Genovese basil, I remember. Mm-hmm. Isn't that great how, like, the herbs will help us, like, remember different times? Like, sometimes the past is just a blur, but if you've got these little anchors, you know? So I was weeding the basil and underneath the apple tree, and my dog was right next to me, and I had my bare feet, you know, and a squirrel ran by. And so she like took off. And when she took off, her claw went right into a vein in my foot. And it was one of these things where it was like, psst, psst,
oh, psst.
Really bad, really deep. And so I kind of crab walked over to the side and found some yarrow growing there and chewed that up and splattered it on my heel and stopped up that bleeding right away. I mean, if I hadn't known how to do that, I could have just bled to death like an idiot. But, you know, there's a little bit of herbal wisdom goes a long ways towards longevity.
Yeah, I feel like we got a couple tips from you. So, you know your yarrow. I always tell people on my herb walks, I'm like, even if you don't want to become an herbalist, but you go hike, like learn yarrow. It can save your life. So longevity, yarrow, and then the chili. Great tips. Well, Richard, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us. And it's been great to hear about your journey and about so many different plants, including Andrographis. So thank you very much.
Okay. Sweet peppers on your head.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Don't forget to head over to the show notes at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com to download your beautifully illustrated recipe card and to get a transcript of this show. There, you'll also be able to sign up for my weekly newsletter, which is the best way to stay in touch with me. The best way to check out Richo's offerings is at strictlymedicinalseeds.com. And if you're a gardener, or if you want to be a gardener, then I highly recommend not only his books, but also his seed catalog. Well, if you'd like more herbal episodes to come your way, then one of the best ways to support this podcast is by subscribing on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. I'd also love to hear your comments about this episode. What's your biggest takeaways? I deeply believe that this world needs more herbalists and plant-centered folks, and I'm so glad that you're here as part of this herbal community. Also, a big round of thanks to the people all over the world who make this podcast happen week to week. Nicole Paul is the project manager who oversees the whole operation from guest outreach to writing show notes to actually uploading each episode and so many other things I don't even know. She really holds this whole thing together. Francesca is our fabulous video and audio editor. She not only makes listening more pleasant, she also adds beauty to the YouTube videos with plant images and video overlays. Tatiana Rusikova is the botanical illustrator who creates gorgeous plant and recipe illustrations for us. I love them. I know that you do too. Christy edits the recipe cards, and then Jenny creates them as well as the thumbnail images for YouTube. Michelle is the tech wizard behind the scenes, and Karen is our student services coordinator and customer support. For those of you who like to read along, Jennifer is who creates the transcripts each week. Xavier, my handsome French husband, is the cameraman and website IT guy. Thanks to Rising Appalachia for their beautiful song, Resilience. Find more of their music at risingappalachia.com. It takes an herbal village to make it all happen, including you. Okay, you've lasted to the very end of the show, which means you get your very own gold star and this herbal tidbit. Well, after hearing from Richo about Andrographis, I was curious about what studies have been done with this plant. While Andrographis might be new to some of you, this is a celebrated herb throughout Asia, including Thailand and India. And researchers have been busy studying it. So here's a quick rundown of a few interesting studies I found. A 2019 study showed that Andrographis had benefits for patients with type 2 diabetes. A preliminary study showed that Andrographis could be a useful natural complement in the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. Researchers are increasingly interested in its ability to modulate inflammation, and a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study was conducted on extracts of Andrographis and found that it was safe and effective in reducing pain in individuals with mild to moderate knee osteoarthritis. A 2015 randomized control trial showed that Andrographis could reduce triglycerides as well as a pharmaceutical treatment. Yay! A 2023 trial showed that both Andrographis and, my favorite, chamomile, as a spray, worked to relieve the pain and symptoms of a viral-caused sore throat. The Andrographis did have slightly better effects than the chamomile. There are several studies looking at Andrographis and cancer treatment. A study in 2016 showed that it's safe and effective palliative treatment for patients with squamous cell carcinoma of the esophagus. In this trial, those taking the Andrographis lived significantly longer. And lastly, a 12-month double-blind placebo-controlled pilot study showed that Andrographis significantly reduces fatigue in patients with relapsing or remitting multiple sclerosis by as much as 44%. That's a big amount. Well, this is a really big variety of studies that are out there. I just chose a few of the ones that sparked my interest, and I'll include a link to all of these in the show notes for those of you who'd like to take a closer look. Until next time, enjoy your herbs.